We're all good, Sam?
Yep. Good evening. Welcome. Time being 5:30 p.m. I will declare the meeting officially open. A very warm welcome to those members of the community who are in the public gallery this evening. It's 5:30 p.m, so I declare the meeting open. Wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Richardson, and Councillor Street. From the staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr. Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Mackey, our Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tyler Moore, our Planner, Ms. Raj, our Communications Lead, Ms. Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Midgley. I'm looking now for a mover and a seconder for the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 8, held on the 19th of May 2025, be confirmed as a true record. Got a mover, Councillor Antoli, seconder, Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. We held a workshop on the 26th of May in relation to the Capital Works program. Takes us to page 2, Declaration of Interest. Does any Councillor have a Declaration of Interest? Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the community who's with us this evening would you like to ask a question? No, thank you. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. But if you do wish to submit one, you can do so by completing the relevant form on the website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question? No, thank you. Questions on notice from councillors. We had one from councillors Dean and Bain in relation to the Huntingfield development with an officer response from Ms. Shakuti. And at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. So open session of council now adjourns and the planning authority commences at 5:33 p.m. which takes us to page 4, Officers' Reports to Planning Authority. DA 2025-100, Development Application for Extension to Dwelling and Ancillary Dwelling at 34 Bainton Street, Kingston, with a recommendation on page 18. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder, seconded Councillor Bain. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So the application is seeking approval for an extension to the existing dwelling and an ancillary dwelling at 34 Bainton Street in Kingston. My understanding is that plans were submitted initially and then three representations or objections were received. This has caused the applicant to resubmit their plans. They've done that on two different occasions, one on the 14th of May and then a second lot on the 21st of May. The original plans, my understanding is that the proposal was outside of the building envelope, which meant that a lot of the performance criteria had to come into account. Once the proposal was reduced, so it was then within the building envelope, the performance criteria is no longer needed to be looked at. Is that correct? Great. So
we might just get a verbal answer to that because for the purpose of the recording it's not sufficient. Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, to if you meet the acceptable solution, the first column on the left, then you will not need to be assessed against the performance criteria. If it meets the acceptable solution, then we are required to accept it.
Thank you. So just to summarise, there was a reduction in the length of the retaining wall and a reduction in the width of the garage, which has then meant that the proposal is now within the building envelope. The representations were raising things like visual impacts, overshadowing, privacy and noise. These are, you know, very valid concerns. I really feel for the neighbours because this proposal is quite bulky. Keeping in mind, though, that it is still within the building envelope, so it makes it a little bit tricky to try and make any changes. I think the representatives have done a really good job at expressing their concerns. We've received some very well thought out objections. My reading of the report is that all of those concerns have been addressed, and with that reduction in the size of the proposal, meaning that it's within the building envelope, it really means there's not much more that can be done, really. So I really feel for those neighbours. I think it's really hard when you've got a nice outlook and then something is proposed next door which is going to change that. There was some concerns that have come through more recently about the garage being used for the Airbnb, and I note that in the recommendation, point 3 specifically says that the garage may not be used for habitation, so hopefully that eases any concerns about the use of the garage. So all in all, I'm happy to support the recommendation. However, I do feel for the neighbours who I think are going to experience a bit of a change to their amenity. Thanks.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Further speakers? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions, please, through you, Mayor. There was mention in the report about a site visit, and I believe the planning assessor visited the site. Was there a mention about an on-site visit with representatives? Have I got that right, have I misread that?
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor, yes. We did have an on-site meeting.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
We did have an on-site meeting to discuss some of the concerns that were raised in the representations that was discussed on-site.
Okay. Yes. Is that normal to actually meet on the client's site or on the applicant's site with representatives? I'm just sort of wondering how common that is. I suppose if I was me, I'd feel uncomfortable with a bunch of people who don't like my... Was it for people who made representations against the actual planning decision or the applicant themselves? I'm a bit confused.
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. So the meeting was with the neighbours of the adjoining property, and the meeting was to discuss concerns
and so
about the proposal.
Thank you. If I may, Mayor,
continue. Yep, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you. So those, how does it work when you have a meeting on site, on the applicant's site? Is that done with permission by the applicant to try and bring about a cordial resolution? Or is that something that you mandate? Could you explain how that operates, please?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, not every application do we meet with the representatives and the applicant. Where we think that there is some benefit in having that discussion, or if we're invited by the representatives to do so, we do where we're able to, noting resource implications of that. So it doesn't happen in every application. We are able to do it, and it's always by invitation and consent to enter the properties.
Thank you. And was the applicant... sorry, Mayor, can I just...
Yep, Councillor Antoli. Yep.
Was the applicant... present at that meeting and able to meet with the neighbours and answer any of their questions?
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. No, the applicant wasn't present. It was just the adjoining neighbours who were also the representatives and myself as the planning officer.
Okay.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. And can you give us a sense as to how satisfied or not the representatives were from that meeting, or was it purely for them an information gathering moment rather than a sharing of opinions moment?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we don't want to make assumption about our assessment of how satisfied they were. The purpose of those site meetings generally is to help explain the plans, because obviously it can be difficult to visualise it on occasions, although these people may have been well-versed in reading the plans, but that's usually the purpose, to explain how it works and understand from their perspective what they perceive the impacts will be on their property.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Just questions about the way the representatives were, their questions, how they were answered. So I felt that the responses that council officers made were quite complete. So we received, there was a shadow report, but if I've got this right, if, as was mentioned very briefly in your discussion with the Deputy Mayor with her intro, if the performance criteria is met, in particular in 2.5.2 about overshadowing, that there were some amendments made, a reduction in the retaining wall and other changes made that satisfied the performance criteria, does that for mean that the overshadowing report doesn't have to be assessed, or complaints about overshadowing don't have to necessarily be addressed?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. It's actually the acceptable solution that is met, so that not the performance criteria.
Sorry,
you go
the
to
acceptable,
the performance
that's right.
criteria if acceptable
Thank
solution
you, yes.
is met. Yes, given that it has met the acceptable solution, it's not required to consider the overshadowing, because the remaining discretionary parts of the application don't look at the overshadowing. It is useful for people to understand, and it helps articulate what's going to occur with the overshadowing in those areas, so it's fine for it to still be there and they can be submitted in addition to it, but because it meets meets the acceptable solution, we don't need to assess overshadowing.
Okay. So if someone
Councillor
wanted to...
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Because we received representation that some people took exception to the overshadowing report, that it didn't tell the full story, that they said, look, sunrise in the middle of June is at 7-something in the morning, not 9 a.m. And so regardless of that objection, you don't have to take that into account, because the building is inside their acceptable envelope, and yes, it's a nice fact that they brought up, but you don't actually have to address it and make any further changes. Is that correct?
Ms. Tullamore.
That's through you, Mayor. That's correct.
Okay, thank
Councillor
you.
Councillor Antoli.
That's all the questions from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So I just have a question through you around the Scenic Landscapes Code and the does not increase the building height. Can we just get some clarification about, I guess, where that's measured from? Because if you're in the backyard and you're standing next to it, it would appear to have increased in height. But I guess if you're up at street level, then in looking at the roof level, it hasn't increased by height. So can we just get some clarification around what exactly the legislation says about that?
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. So the building height, when viewed from Paynton Street, would be the same as it is currently, but the building height to the rear of the block where the extension is proposed would definitely increase because of the second floor that would be beneath the extension on the top floor.
Councillor Bain.
And just a follow-up question, is the legislation pretty clear that that measurement is taken from the street level?
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. It's taken from the natural ground level.
Natural ground level, okay, great. And just
Councillor Bain.
A follow-up question. When we're measuring the privacy aspect, is it pretty clear that the parameters are based on the distances from the fence? And in this case, the distances from the fence are quite within what the legislation says is acceptable?
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. So the side setback requirements are 3 metres from the side boundary fences, and the rear setback requirements are 4 metres, and the proposal complies with these requirements. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions, comments? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So a few more questions. Good to hear that the view that is important is that taken from natural ground level. So that was an important clarification, I think. My question around 14.7.2, also in the scenic landscape area, the scenic landscapes code, the addition and alterations to the dwelling increase the gross floor area by 50% on top of the existing footprint. So therefore it must be assessed against the performance criteria. Can you please take us through how it's how it meets the performance criteria on that code? Because it doesn't comply with the acceptable solution, but how does it comply with the performance criteria or not?
Ms. Raj?
I'm looking at page 26 of my agenda, in the table, on page 26.
Through you, Mayor. So the performance criteria for Clause E14.7.2 requires buildings visible from public spaces to maintain scenic landscape value by a few points. So here it talks about the external finishes that are non-reflective. The second point talks about incorporating low roof lines that follow the natural form and then minimizing visual impact, cut and fill, located below skylines and located to take advantage of existing native vegetation. So the performance criteria requires that one or more of the following complies. So do you have any specific questions in terms of the way that it's been addressed?
I guess the question is, so it becomes essentially a subjective matter as to whether or not discretion is granted on this occasion to meet the performance criteria. So I guess I'm interested in hearing what the one or more performance criteria that it does unequivocally meet are. Because otherwise, as far as I read it, it just becomes a judgment call as to whether or not the planning authority thinks that it's acceptable in this case to be above 25%. Usually we would say if it's 25% increase or below, that's an acceptable solution, therefore we won't haggle over it. But the fact that this one's 50% means that there's some discretion here. So I'm just interested to hear, is what those one or more performance criteria are or aren't that mean that in this case 50% increase in size is acceptable.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. It's probably worth understanding with the acceptable solution when it talks about the not more than 50% is that it's trying to give an out to extensions to dwellings that don't need to come through a planning process. So it's not actually limiting that you can't go over 50%. It's just saying if you meet these particular criteria, which is written in the acceptable solution in the agenda there, if it meets, you know, one of those, then you don't have to go down the path. Because if you can appreciate extensions occur all the time within the municipality, and it's not appropriate that they all necessarily have that. So I think it's important to have in mind that it's not trying to cap it, so you'll be familiar with site coverage percentages inside the low-density residential, and that's really talking about the site coverage, and it's wanting to make sure we've still got open spaces. So it's sort of read a bit differently to those ones. Ms. Raj has obviously written an extensive justification against the performance criteria and the bullets that follow on the several pages that follow it. So it needs to be read together. And with respect to the comment, is it at the discretion of the officers? Yes, it is at the discretion of the officers, because that's what our job is to do. And we assess it against the criteria. And obviously we take into account any former decisions, tribunal decisions, guidance and guides that are provided to us to get to forming those positions. And in this instance, it is recognised that it is a change, certainly from what the neighbouring properties or that property had on it, but looking more broadly, the proposal and the scale of the development is consistent with housing in the area. If this was proposing a three-storey dwelling, that would be abnormal, or very unusual. Obviously, we do have some subfloors, but it's very uncommon. And so the assessment that's written there by Ms. Raj in there, it does just provide those justifications against each of those points. Unfortunately, the planning scheme is written in a way that sometimes the performance criteria that we have to assess against doesn't immediately match the acceptable solutions. Mm. And we've got several of those, unfortunately. I should say we didn't write the scheme. State government wrote it, and we get to administer it. And so they don't always match perfectly. So there's nothing that specifically says in there about if it's over 50%, you must assess this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Through you, ma'am.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, ma'am. On the point about, so obviously the Representations were made in opposition to this proposal on a number of grounds. Some were privacy, some were about overshadowing, which we've already mentioned, and then some have been about the bulk or the nature of the development. Now it says, and I'm looking on page 14 in the report, it says that there is a precedent, so I'll just quote it directly. It says, the proposed development will have some visual impacts due to its height and bulk when viewed from adjoining properties and those lots located on a lower topography. However, given the general residential nature of the area, there are precedents of much higher density along Bainton Street, such as the multiple dwelling units. My question is, does this, therefore, if approved, set another precedent? Does it set another precedent for the allowable size and bulk of developments in that area? And I mean specific to that part of that street, as opposed to just the general residential zone.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Each application is assessed on its own merits, so we need to consider any proposal within the context of its own site and surrounds. Precedence does occur insofar as there is change and evolving. If there wasn't change and evolving, we'd still just have farmland. So the character of an area does evolve over time. So it will be looked towards. It doesn't mean it's someone's right just because this one's double storey that anyone can go double storey. It has to be assessed on its own merits. It still has to meet the acceptable solutions or the performance criteria, including those building envelopes. So it's not just a given that anyone will be able to do it. But yes, it does start to present a different characteristic in the street.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor, I'm interested in knowing about the proposed rooms and the ancillary dwelling. I realise that we're assessing the proposal that's in front of us and not a future hypothetical proposal, but some of the issues that have been raised by the representatives were essentially that if, hypothetically, a later inclusion of an internal access door were installed, then that would exceed the 60-metre-squared floor area limit, and therefore that would make the development non-compliant under the planning scheme. I realise that we're assessing this based on the proposition that's in front of us and not on a hypothetical change, but in that case, would council have permission to intervene? Is that not the case? That council could say that you're in breach of your permit if you did something that you weren't supposed to?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, we do have a compliance under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, so we do compliance with development isn't in accordance with development. I would say that the internal door to the garage is actually debatable insofar as does it really count as part of the ancillary dwelling, and I think an argument could be mounted that it doesn't, even without closing the door, but the officer has taken particular caution and worked with the developer to agree to close that door off so that it's not usable, so it's not used that. If the garage itself was, and Councillor Antolli made a comment about it before, converted to an Airbnb, most certainly that is a compliance matter. That also would have some implications under the Building Act as well.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. And I appreciate your indulgence, Mayor. I'm just trying to get through all of the issues that were raised in the representations because that's our obligation is to consider those. Some of the issues raised related by representatives related to a perception of a diminution in property values. And now my understanding has always been that in our assessment, that's actually not part of the assessment that we can consider. But I just wanted to hear from an expert. Am I correct in that essentially as a planning authority we are determining this based on the objectives of the planning scheme, any other prescribed matter, and we're considering all the representations that were made, but as far as I read it, Looper it falls silent on the issue of property value. So can we consider whether or not a neighbour's property will be affected in value by a proposal?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the perception of property devaluation is not a planning consideration and that's been reiterated a number of times in tribunal and court decisions.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. To the matter of... So I note that with the... Currently, thinking now about egress or getting to the backyard of the property, as the current status quo will be changed by this proposal. Now, my question is there any legislative or statutory requirement to have easy access to the backyard? Like the fact that they're narrowing access to the backyard, you know, I'm thinking like is there anything in the planning scheme that says you need to be able to get a fire truck into the backyard or whatever? Like, or is that not an accessible criteria?
Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. There are no requirements in terms of having access or pedestrian access or vehicular access to the backyard. However, this proposal does have an access, a pedestrian pathway along the side of the dwelling to be able to access the rear public open space. Sorry. Private open space.
Private open space.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. So for me, Mayor, this is... Look, I just want to say that I really do empathise with the representations, with the representors that made their case, and they made very comprehensive arguments for why they don't support this development. I'm under an obligation to look at this through the lens of the planning scheme and whether or not it meets the criteria. And I guess the thing that I found interesting the thing that piqued my empathy with the representors is that the changes that were made by the proponent were significant enough to mean that they no longer have to go through all of the rigmarole because they now, on a number of key criteria, they now meet the acceptable solution, which means that the planning authority has no grounds to intercede in that case. But some of those changes were relatively minor. I can see why, you know, in the reduction of the size of a retaining wall, we're talking about less than a metre in, you know, in places. And so it must feel that it's not a significant material change, and yet what it means is that this planning authority cannot make up our own rules on this occasion. I mean, the reason why we have those acceptable solutions is to make clear when there is no discretion. So I've tried to, I think, be fair in going through the concerns that were raised by the representors, and I have thought deeply about this particular one. I think it's a really interesting one because you have neighbours that don't want something, and it's there's no doubt that it will change the look of that particular part of the street. But on balance, I believe that it does meet the performance criteria where it has to. It clearly meets the acceptable solutions where it does, and so I support the officer's report. I share my sympathies with those representatives, but I'm satisfied to vote in favour of this application. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, there's really not much to add. All the questions plus more have been answered, and I think the contribution we just heard from Councillor Cordova probably hit the nail on the head for a lot of us in terms of, or me personally, I won't speak on behalf of others. I wouldn't lie if I wasn't somewhat uncomfortable. There's clearly going to be a loss of amenity for the neighbours. It's a unique one. It's not just the neighbours this side, but below this new property. It is a bulky build. Reading this report, as Councillor Cordova just pointed out, those tiny adjustments of 10 centimetres here and there have meant that the acceptable solutions have been met, and it doesn't give us really any leeway to find any grey area, and it's been well documented in this report. So I feel like we've been here before in terms of us as councillors get put in this, I have to admit, unenviable position of having to approve something which is clearly going to impact those neighbours nearby. But in terms of the scheme, it's been... Yeah, the report's been really well written to describe that we don't have much of a position to do anything other than to recommend this, and I think as a councillor, to not recommend it and the risk that we would be burdening councillor ratepayers with it going through the tribunal, as the case has been made, the answers have been very thorough. It means that I can't do anything other than support it, although, as I said, it does make me uncomfortable. So thank you to the other councillors for their questions.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I intend to be brief because the report is comprehensive, and I thank our staff for that. The development application as it stands does meet the requirements of the planning scheme. There is one matter that's emerged in the course of this discussion, though, that I do want to address on the record, and that's this idea that somehow... A development application that meets all of the acceptable solutions and doesn't need to resort to the performance criteria is somehow more virtuous than one that doesn't meet the acceptable solutions and needs to be assessed against the performance criteria. The only difference here is that for the most part the acceptable solutions are quantitative measurements that are easily clearly in or clearly out. We operate in a performance-based planning scheme, and when you don't meet the acceptable solutions, yes, you go to the performance criteria, which in many cases are a qualitative assessment as opposed to a quantitative one, but that doesn't necessarily make any development application that resorts to the performance criteria less virtuous than one that does refer only to the acceptable solutions. And I think Ms. Tyler Moore really hit the nail on the head when she said, well, the acceptable solutions don't often match up to the performance criteria. Well, there's a reason for that. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But sometimes there are not qualitative assessments of quantitative matters. And so that's why there's a bit of a difference. But it doesn't mean that we get the opportunity to make up rules on the fly. It doesn't mean that we necessarily have grey areas that we can enter into. Yeah, people might have different analysis of what meets those performance criteria and what doesn't, but there still emerges out the other end a correct and an incorrect answer. So I just want to put on record that we really need to shy away from this idea that just because something has a development application has a resort to the performance criteria, it's somehow less good than a development application that meets all of the acceptable solutions that might be relevant. Not strictly on the topic of this DA, but given it's emerged over the course of the discussion, I just thought it was worth putting on record my view.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Are there any further contributions? I've just got a couple of questions with things that I'd like clarified. In relation to page 10 on 1.3, so the question of, because the plans were amended to allow for the garage to be set back from 0.2 to 0.4 on the western side, and then the width of the opening for the garage from 3.8 to 3.6, there's a statement there that there is now conformity with the building envelope clause as only the gutter of the garage protrudes out of the building envelope by 0.10. So that's kind of saying most of it now fits in it, but then 0.10 of a metre is actually protruding out of the building envelope. So it's either, I don't quite understand how that can both be conforming and when it's clearly non-conforming, because there's still a section that's out of the building envelope, even though it's a small section. Ms. Raj.
Through you, Mayor. So clause 10.4.2. 283 says a dwelling excluding outbuildings with a building height of not more than 2.4 metres and protrusions that don't extend not more than 0.9 metre horizontally beyond the building envelope. So we're talking in this instance about protrusions, and the definition for protrusions within the planning scheme means a protrusion from buildings such as awning, steps, porches, eaves, fascias, gutters, masonry chimneys, flues, pipes, domestic fuel, water tank, heating and cooling equipment. In this instance, the gutter protrudes 0.1 metre, which is within the acceptable solution.
Thank you. The devil is always in the detail of the planning scheme, I think we find, when you sort of get to that level of it. Look, I just would concur with some of the other comments that councillors have made, that this is one of these issues where I think we have huge empathy for the representors who live nearby, who are no doubt going to be impacted by the scale of this. I've been in a situation myself many years ago where I had my view built out and it wasn't a pleasant thing. And I know others, you know, we've had this sort of thing happen in the past in the community where there have been the planning scheme has allowed, you know, large developments to take place on a suburban block next door to one that is of a smaller scale. But it allows it to happen, and so we get in this quandary where, as the Act says, we're sitting here tonight as a planning authority, not as the council, and we wear a different hat. And that hat says to us when we have our training, when we come in as elected representatives, that we have a duty to assess the development applications that come before here, based on the adherence to the planning scheme and whether it meets it or not. I guess as elected representatives, we don't have the knowledge and the skill and the qualifications of our planning staff, and that is because none of us are qualified planners, and the complexity of it. I think somebody tried to tell me the other day our planning scheme in Tasmania, our planning laws weren't complex, but I think we all know how complex they are. And so we have to rely on the advice of the our qualified planners, and the test always for me is, and I think Councillor Dean touched on it, the test is, do we have any grounds to refuse this because it does not meet the planning scheme that would hold up in the tribunal? And there have been occasions in the past where, you know, that we have overturned on a very rare occasion, it's been a long time since it happened, where we have overturned some advice that have been given to us by qualified planners, and then we have to then foot the bill in the tribunal. And as Councillor Dean alluded to, that can be a very, very costly exercise because we end up paying for the costs of not only our own legal costs but also the costs for the applicant in that case. So I do, I think we all feel a bit heavy-hearted with this one in terms of the representors who are involved, the cases that they've put, and it is one of those things where we are bound to make a judgment based on the advice of our planning staff. I know that's probably all not comfort to those neighbours who don't wish to see this built, but unfortunately that is the way that the system is constructed. So having said that, Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up? Okay, so I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. That now means that the planning authority of council now adjourns at 6:08 p.m. and the open session of council recommences at 6:08 p.m. Takes us to page 50, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Takes us now to officers' reports to council with a recommendation on page 52. We're looking at nomination of licensed person. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A moved Councillor Cordova and a seconder Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Purpose of the report is that council, as a licensed entity pursuant to the Occupational Licensing Act 2005, seeks to nominate Miss Mary McGee, Council's Building, Investigation and Compliance Officer, to perform the functions or powers of the Permit Authority within the municipal area in accordance with Section 24.2bi of the Building Act 2016. I'll take the rest as read and I support the report. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
I just have a question, Mayor. I have no doubt that Miss McGee is appropriately qualified for the role, but I'm wondering whether we're aware of where other local government entities have pitched the seniority of the delegation here and whether we're in line with other councils.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I don't know the relativity to other councils, and obviously we do have existing staff that have the delegation, and this is a request to add another staff to have the same delegation as required for the permit authority. But sorry, I don't know the answer to what other councils do.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Cordova, I'm assuming you don't want to close the debate. I will put the recommendation then. It was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to 16.2, Kingborough Sports Centre fees. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Dean, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Dean, thanks, I think you're the one who picked this up.
Thanks, Mayor. It's a very minor one, but for anyone listening at home, the recap was that we, when the fees and charges was brought before us at last meeting, there was a slight anomaly just in relation to squash court fees up at the Sports Centre, and this just amends that slightly, so thank you to the staff for quickly looking into it and basically come to the conclusion that the original concession fee would remain for kids or pensioners or whoever has a concession card to play squash at the Sports Centre, and the rest of it is read as read. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I will put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to 16.3, appendices. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor in the Deputy Mayor. Any questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Question is about, I'm now looking at the, I guess it's the CEO's, it's the Mayor's activities, the 1st of May to 28th of May. I'm looking at the 21st of May. Just interested in the planning matter listed there regarding Tinderbox. Is there any information you can divulge on that planning matter in Tinderbox? I'm looking at page 71 of the council agenda.
Oh, yep. So that was the CEO and I met with a local resident at Tinderbox who had some time ago completed an extensive development application at a property at Tinderbox and who just wanted to talk about some of the issues that they encountered along the way. So the CEO and I visited there. There were a couple of things they wanted to show us on site. And we've got a couple of things to follow up just in relation to, not in relation to that, but into other things about road safety and a couple of other bits and pieces.
Thank you. Another question, if I may, Mayor. This time it's about the quarterly report, and I'm looking now at page 80 of our agenda, specifically 1.2.4. The description is prepare a local historic heritage code to protect the historic cultural heritage significance of places, precincts and landscapes. And the comment is there is a planning scheme code already in place. However, it is in need of updating. No budget allocation to do this. I think this has been raised before, but I just don't recall what is the status of that. If it is something that needs updating, why isn't there a proposal to have a budget allocation to do that?
The CEO.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So you're right. I mean, it is the Heritage Code. We have an aspiration to be able to put in place a heritage planner to be able to undertake that work. We don't have a line item at the moment, and it hasn't made the priority cut for where we need to put staffing resources up until this point. So it maintains something that we know that we need to do at some point, but there are other priorities through the organisation, and operating in a lean manner, it hasn't reached the threshold where we have the resource availability to be able to undertake that work.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. My concern around this is that, and I'd be interested if there's any answer to my question, which is, are we at risk of losing heritage, things that will, in the future, one day, be heritage protected by virtue of this council not having a plan or a budget allocation around that? Are we at risk of losing things that would otherwise be protected if we did have a plan and a budget allocation? And does the CEO perhaps share my concern around that?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So as it notes within the quarterly report, there is a planning scheme code already in place, so there are protections in place there. In terms of the update and whether or not in absence of that update it's creating additional risk, I would need to refer to advice from our planning team to give you a more fulsome response to that. However, the fact that it's on the work program indicates that we believe that there is some work there to be done, but when we're looking over the organisation in terms of the resource requirements that we have, it hasn't quite met that threshold for where we think it is the most pressing next thing for us to undertake.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, my final questions are around 1.3.1 and 1.3.2, so we're still on page 81 now. This relates to emergency management. And from my perspective, the way that the council and council officers particularly handled everything with relation to the Snug Tears bushfire was, from my personal perspective, very admirable. I was really impressed by I went to the town hall meeting at Margate. I felt like information was being provided to me and my family as much as other people. I really felt genuinely that all the authorities involved were genuinely trying to keep us in the loop, and I just was very kind of proud of the council and being on the council in that moment because of how it turned out, and all the work from really good people working under considerable pressure to get that done. My question was around the learnings from that, and I can see the commentary there. My question is, are we pretty confident that we are at best practice when it comes to handling those types of situations?
The CEO.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. So obviously the response to the Snug Tier bushfires was a complex one with a number of agencies, and so council plays our role, but importantly I think it's worth acknowledging the really good leadership that occurred from SES and the Tasmanian Fire Service in the response to that that event. In terms of council's roles, look, I was pretty proud of how council responded in that incident, and we played our role admirably. In saying that, I think there's always things where you sort of reflect back on what occurred and continually sort of test yourselves whether or not you're doing everything as well as you possibly can. So in terms of our readiness, absolutely, I think that was a really important, I guess, I don't want to say test because it was a real event which had real risk, but it was good to see it in practice, and there are things that we know that we can reflect on and continue to improve on in regard to how the council responds in cases like that.
Any further questions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question regarding the Development Services Quarterly Report. There's a couple of mentions, maybe more than a couple, of us having lost our business improvement officer, which I wasn't aware of. Could I get an update on the background there about if it's possible to share, and where are we at now with that role? What are we doing next?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So, yes, our business improvement officer left council a couple of months back to go off and do other things. So the role is currently vacant and is being held vacant whilst we consider some other things across the organisation and how best we approach this area of business to make sure that we are making the right decisions for the long term in regard to how we manage continuous improvement. As Councillor Cordova asked in the last question, you know, continuing to, interrogate the way we respond in certain circumstances, the way we do business is a really important part of how we go forward as an organisation. That role and the essence of that role is a really important part of it, but we're just taking a moment to pause to make sure that we're going to be putting the right thing, right person in the right place in the organisation.
Thank you, Mayor.
Any further questions? Councillor Dean.
Not a question, but just a quick grab for the Development Services Quarterly Report, just to point out two things. One, for the people that are still listening to this, are probably the type of people that will be engaged and know what the agenda is, but we're looking at the appendices. And so if you're interested in what's happening in terms of the planning scheme changeover, there is an important update or just explains where we're at with that. But also just wanted to note that it's nice to see that planning permit applications are still slightly on the up over the last 2 years. So there's a couple of good bits of news for me. So not a question, sorry.
That was more like an advertorial. That's it. Thank you for the advertorial. I was actually going to highlight that it does indicate that in the next 3 months we will have the report in relation to LPS come before us. We don't have a specific date at the moment, but I guess watch that space. If there are no further questions, I'm going to put the recommendation that the appendices be received and noted. Moved, Councillor Antoli and seconded, Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. There are no notices of motion, and then we just have to confirm the items to be dealt with in closed session. So in accordance with Regulation 15, the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, tender assessment AB2508, Illawong Hinsby stormwater upgrade, tender assessment AB2511, Channel Highway footpaths and shared path construction in Snug, and tender assessment AB2510, Ewing Avenue stormwater upgrade. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. So that brings us to the end of the open session of Council. Thank you to all those people. We had a number of people from the community in here earlier, and I'm sure there were some people watching along on YouTube also. So thank you very much for being with us. And in accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So open session of Council adjourned at 6:21 p.m. Good evening.